Well, so expecting this to be somewhat informal, unfortunately, the council members that we have right now are, I think, pretty well aware of what we're doing as far as the comprehensive plan. So it may be that there's some of it, a lot of it, that's reviewed for you. But the main thing that I wanted to do is you're going to be getting comprehensive plan changes pretty fast and furious over the next 4 or 5 months, and wanted to give you the broad overview right now at this point so that when we do get into the more specific stuff, you can kind of go back to this and remember, okay, I might not agree with what we're doing, and I'll tell Yori that, but I understand what he might be thinking of. So starting off with this picture, and the color was a lot better when I set it up about an hour ago, so I don't know what's going on. Here's a picture of Ferndale looking west. So this is, it's not Main Street. I think Main Street would be actually further to the east later. 1892, where the population was about 200. So if you fast forward to 2036, we're expecting to have about 100 times that population, 20,000 people. So a lot of change in 150 years. There are two main processes in the comp plan, and I think that this is going to be important to remember because we get focused a lot on that first process and kind of forget about the second process, even though the second process is really more important. So the first process is that growth allocation. That's where we had the big fight with the county a few years back. How much are we going to grow by? It's where we still have, on the one hand, more of the environmental folks saying we're not going to grow that much. And on the other hand, more of the business community saying we're going to grow by much more than that much. In a lot of ways, it just turns into a debate over numbers that are meaningless, where what does growth by 20,000 people mean? And it depends on the context of what city you're going in, where in Seattle, that might be growth in 1 or 2 year period. Here, it's growth over a 50 or 100-year period. And it also is, how do you actually, what form does that growth take, and do you have the infrastructure to support it? So people freaking out because of a difference in basically a half a percentage point in growth, it's a big issue, but it's one that I think that we've already largely covered, as long as we do part two well. So we expect that Ferndale is going to grow by just under 7,000 people and about 4,000 jobs. That's what we proposed the allocation from Whatcom County to be. And whether or not that comes true, we will see. Let me just see if I can't change this. Because it did.
It really is beautiful.
What time frame are you expecting that growth?
This would be by 2036. So this is a little bit darker, but you do get all those colors. So this would be by 2036. The thing with growth is it's not going to grow by 6,833 people. I'll guarantee you that. It might be 6,000 people. It might be 8,000 people. Would we rather guess a little bit higher possibly and be able to plan for the infrastructure out a little bit past what we might get? Or do we want to be in a situation where we plan for less and, oh, gosh, we only plan for 6,000 and we do get 6,833 people, and that extra 833 people triggers Thornton or some other project. So we've tried to guess higher so that we're prepared if it happens. Or, and this is a huge issue, how is it distributed? Where if we see 5 in there, which is kind of the central part of the city where I think just about all of the council members live, what if Area 5 gets 6,000 of those 6,833 people?
We're moving.
And some of you might be.
Sold my house for a good price.
But if that happens, if we still end up getting 6,833, but if we get 6,000 of them or 4,000 of them in one district, which might happen, we want to be able to have said that we've planned for that, or that the projects that we have the capacity to handle that, so that we're not surprised. And no offense to Bellingham, but I think Bellingham has been very surprised in terms of what's happening right now at Bakerview, where while they planned for it, they didn't plan for it, and they're finding that they're needing to redo base review perhaps three times over a 10-year period at the cost mostly of the taxpayer, because their impact fees and other things are so much lower. They're only getting 10, 15 cents on the dollar for the development cost. So that's why they're having to go out to the state and look at grant funding. We're not wanting to put ourselves in that situation.
Just a quick question about the jobs numbers. Because we were going back and forth about whether we would count people that worked in the Lummi Nation, where it's trust land but it's still in the city. So what did the county finally decide? Because you still got the $4,000 jobs, but I don't see anything on the in the Lummi land.
In there.
Yeah.
This map, actually, that's a good point, probably should be updated to reflect that. Now, does it in 8?
In 8, I can't see.
It does show a fairly significant, if you're looking over on the right-hand columns, mm-hmm. under employment, under 8, it's showing a growth of under 1,000 to over 2,000 people working in that area.
So we are taking into account what they're going to be building, and that's where
we are.
I can see there's a lot of job growth down there.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. that's if you see the bar chart on there, mm-hmm. the blues, that employment growth is more than any other area except for Main Street. Mm-hmm. So what did the county do? The county kind of punted on it, where instead of having a debate over is this tribal land and therefore subject to the federal government where we can't plan for it because we are a state or local government, which is subservient to that, the fact of the matter is those employees or those customers are still going to drive there. It's still going to use water and sewer. So aside from our made-up political stuff, they exist. Mm-hmm. So might as well just include them. And that's the argument that we're going to be making to the County Planning Commission. Has more or less accepted that. They have one last meeting, I believe, and then the County Council. But basically saying, look, we don't know precisely what Lummi will do. We know that in general they plan to develop with commercial and retail uses. They have a lot of ability to do that. And gosh, if they're successful and they do a regional one, it's going to draw other things. So 4,000 is not a scientific number, but it's an even number that we believe will address not only the rest of Ferndale's growth, but that growth as well, including in the northeast Slater area.
How do you determine that when we don't have any agreement for water sewer, or if they have some other plan for water and sewer to develop that area? Because I don't see how you can put a hotel in without water and sewer.
My understanding is what they have basically said is we're going to find a way to do that. As a tribe, they have first right to different resources that we don't necessarily have the rights to, and that they would be perhaps willing to go it alone. They remain open to an agreement.
Yeah, we've talked to them about the possibility of talking about the extension of utilities, both water and sewer, to that side of Slater. But they could conceivably drill their own wells and put in their own treatment plant.
So the choice then becomes, do we assume that they're going to be unsuccessful, or do we assume that they're going to be successful? And they've been pretty successful, you know, at getting funding and getting things to move. So we've plugged that in as, let's assume that they are successful. What does that now mean for the rest of Ferndale? And as I'm going to discuss in the next couple slides, we're then wanting to build in a lot of those things into the different sub-elements or chapters of the comp plan in a way that doesn't necessarily commit us, but enables us to plan ahead. And I think that that's one of the main things that we'd like this comprehensive plan to go is preparing us to the greatest extent possible for opportunities or challenges. Where you asked last Monday, have we been successful at everything that we've tried to do? And no, we haven't. I mean, I think for the vast majority, we've been able to, or we've been able to find a way to make it happen. But sometimes we're caught flat-footed, where an applicant comes in, they say, hey, I want to do this, or something bad happens, and we say, oh my gosh, how are we going to react to this? And to the extent that the comp plan can start to prepare us for some things, or to say, gosh, you know, we talk about this idea once every 5 years, and each time we come to the same conclusion, how can the comp plan be a kind of clearinghouse for information to say, the reason why we haven't, you know, added a second bridge over Main Street is because of this or that or the other thing, where hopefully then it could help staff and council to say, we've already talked about this, have things changed, or should we look at other things?
One other question along the lines of the south area. Can we be forced to provide water and sewer to the nation from our city stuff?
Okay. It's in trust land. It might as well be Canada or Brazil.
Okay, that is picking up down the road for, you know, a water sewer storm. You know, how much of that do we play into us providing them versus, okay, you're going to go on your own, and we're not going to include that in our comp plan?
Yeah, and then one of the big issues with their development is that it's a phased development. So while they could certainly drill a well, and you see wells drilled all the time, that's easy. The hard part is the sewer side of it. I know when the Tulalip started Quilceta Village, they literally bought boxcars full of dog food to feed to their sewer plant, because they didn't have when it was just Home Depot, they didn't have the flow to make their system work. Municipal wastewater treatment plants need inflow in order to operate for the biological actions to work. So for a short period of time, they actually had to provide it separately. So I can only imagine that would be probably the same situation with the Lummi development, that if they start off with a first phase, I guess for a gas station, they would probably put in a drain field, septic drain field. But, I mean, given the expansiveness of their plans, that's not a long-term solution. So I think at some level it would make a lot of sense for us to supply, especially sewer, since the Bellingham sewer lines are literally miles away. And sewer's the expensive side. So we'll have to see what their thoughts are.
Economic development on our sewer plan, the plant. We're looking at upgrading the plant. So the plant for that. I know we talked about it for the jail, which
right.
Who knows if that'll ever happen now again.
Yeah, and one of the silver linings of the delay in the jail construction is it does buy us 2 to 4 to whatever years of planning and construction, because we had figured that the jail would pretty much push us right up to our sewer capacity. But now we've got the luxury of a little bit more time to at least get that project planned and designed and then underway.
And, you know, one of the other things is the tribe does have first right to water rights, and should the city need water rights and the tribe has them and needs them.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, our water lines, our sewer lines are literally right there across the street. But that, as you all know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the outcome is logical. We'll have to see. They have a lot of balls up in the air, sort of.
A lot of balls, period. Yeah. The jobs numbers, are those historical trends? Are those based on, like, we have this much industrial land, this much mixed use in each area, therefore there's enough room for 5 companies to come in with 50 people?
It's much more based on the potential instead of the history.
Okay.
Where the potential, if you took...
The potential is based on...
On capacity. A couple of different things. The whole Lummi discussion throws it out of whack a little bit, where that's just such a huge amount that the market's not going to demand it by itself. You know, the Lummies are basically potentially creating a market, a regional driver, the same as Tulalip. There wasn't a need for the Tulalip properties, but they created that market. Minus that, if we went back to the city's initial allocation, which was about 3,000 jobs, we're expecting about 1,000 jobs coming out of the Lummi and out of the Northeast Slater area directly. The initial allocation was about 3,000 jobs, which is approximately 47%, I want to say, of the anticipated population growth. And that does meet our historic trends, where right now there's 0.47 jobs for each resident of Ferndale. And so we said, we need to have that, or else we're going to increasingly become a bedroom community of Bellingham.
Do we have enough land, enough land zone industrial and mixed use?
We do. It will be interesting to see what the mix is, where one place where we think that there probably is a market is for a truck stop. You know, it's just that freight wants to go through here, and this is a logical stop. That doesn't create very many jobs, but it is very intensive as far as the land that it creates. So if we had a major regional truck stop in the city limits, that's going to eat up land that might have been better used for employees in a super feed or more intense type of development. So we'll see which way it goes. We think that we do have enough. That's one thing where right now one of our major benefits, as Greg said the other day, is we've got land that's available for cheap. The other thing is making sure that we can service that land, because a lot of the land that we have available in areas 1 and 4 is not currently serviced by water and sewer. So it's in the city, but it's not online.
Thank you.
So by June 30th of this year, the county has to finish their planning. So that means that we need to go to them before their last meeting in June, and they would love it if we could come to them by March, but we're not going to come to them and say, we're done with our comp plan, it's consistent with your comp plan, done. And we think that we can do that because, as you know, since 2010 we've been really active in a new parks plan, annexation blueprint. I think that we are doing well as far as the CIPs. Kevin's busy working on changing the existing CIP from a 1 year to a 6 year. We updated our water and sewer plans, although they need some fairly substantial changes or updates.
Utility stuff.
We've got the transportation element that we just did. We have the Main Street Master Plan. So compared to all other jurisdictions in Whatcom County, where they haven't updated theirs since before the recession, we have a good direction. And provided that the new council doesn't want to radically change that direction, we don't have to rethink things from scratch. So we're in a good position to start looking at other things. Where the county, I believe, really is focused on checking off what is required in comprehensive plans. Do you do an inventory of this? Yes. Did you analyze this? Yes. But it doesn't really tell you anything. It just becomes a thicker and thicker document that really only attorneys, developers, staff, consultants, people that get paid to read it. No one wants to read it.
I love to read it.
Right.
Like normal.
Technically, you're paid.
Yeah. Yeah, you're paid.
But that everybody should read it, because the worst thing that can happen is people being misinformed or uninformed, especially being misinformed, where you just know enough because you saw your friend who is involved in some form of politics posted on Facebook that the county has it out for you. And so you come and you're really mad, and it turns out that it's not so bad, or that your friend has, you know, kind of tweaked it a little bit. So we're wanting to try to change every single chapter to say we need to have a comp plan that has a lot of information in it. And we're not going to be able to go to everyone and somehow make it require reading or something they want to read. So rather than changing people, we need to change the format through which we have this information. Because ultimately, if you guys don't understand what the comp plan says, or if we don't read it, it's useless. And it then really does become that planning document where every 5 years I freak out, you listen to me, and then you ignore it for another 5 years. And that's really kind of what it does become, is, oh, this is really important, but, oh, we can get by day-to-day without it. A good comp plan can really be a useful tool and can save us a lot of money, can save us a lot of time, can avoid, big political hassles where when we were doing the police station, a lot of folks said, what's this police station you're talking about? Why do we need this? Why do we need a new library? It's not in the comp plan. Well, it's pretty easy to put that kind of stuff in the comp plan so we can say, we planned ahead. We're good on this. Won't change everything. It won't necessarily minimize things, but it could change some things. So what we're wanting to do is really two things. First, we have the existing plan. hundreds and hundreds of pages of text, and it's written by planners. So you read my staff report, then multiply that by about 100 times. It's horrible. We want to change it so that it has, the actual comp plan has more graphics. This is level of service where it's explaining level of service and a little infographic instead of 4 or 5 pages that no one will read. We're wanting to include kind of what if statements where it doesn't obligate us to do any one thing or a specific thing, but it says, hey, what about this? What about a pool? What if we created a community pool? Maybe we will, maybe we won't, but let's have this discussion. What if we extended church down? What if we did this? So that we can kind of leave breadcrumbs for ourselves. Hey, here's why we decided not to do this. And then the future us can say, well, that's changed now. You said you couldn't do this because the city didn't have enough land, but all of a sudden we do have land. Things have changed. Maybe more people are going to read this version. What we expect and hope for is this last thing is what people are really going to read, where we would create a multimedia video or presentation that could be put on YouTube that lasts about 5 to 7 minutes. That's just more than what the normal YouTube is right now. So YouTube is great because that's what people look at while they're waiting to go to the doctor. It's while they're waiting for dinner to be cooked, while they're waiting for this meeting. It's, I'm bored, let me find something. If we can have some people look at this and be able to see through visual depictions and illustrations what direction the city proposes to go and to understand basically some of the terms, even to have it narrated. You know, we were thinking former council member Hansen would be excellent for narrating something like this. Have videos or flyovers where you can see the different projects that we propose.
Does the MRSC or AWC have videos already that explain some of the concepts?
They do.
But they did.
They're not great, but they do.
Okay.
And we're thinking that while the comp plan itself is only updated once in a while, we're going to be able to continually update this PowerPoint, which will be for each chapter. Planning Commission's already looked at several chapters, and they've just loved it because it is a totally different way of conveying this information. We'd also be able to have links to the actual comp plan itself. The actual comp plan itself would have links within it to glossary terms or other codes or other things so people can click through there. We expect that most people are going to be reading it on a screen, which really changes the format where you don't have that big book. And by putting the PowerPoint, what I'm calling it, online, and Riley has been absolutely tremendous where he's going to be really putting together that for the website. There are so many technologies that we have access to. Anything from Google Earth to you can have through Google Cardboard, it's not all Google, virtual reality where you can put on YouTube a virtual reality display where you actually wear these glasses that cost about $4 and you can look around maybe at future downtown that we're thinking. It's technology that we now have available to us and we don't have time to do it by June 30th, but we will have time over time to do that sort of thing. What we're going to have to do is balance the time it takes to create that with how many people might actually read it or the utility of it.
Is that an intern job?
It could be an intern job very much, yeah. So the screen-based format does allow for those easier live updates. Guess what? Council just authorized construction of Thornton last night. Put it on there, and that's the new thing on there. Again, the links between the documents, the multimedia, where you don't need to really think, you know, while you're watching it, it will give you the information. It doesn't dumb things down, but it certainly isn't as nuanced as reading the comp plan itself would be. It also allows us to cut and paste information where so often there's a concept that we might use in one presentation or one document that Katie might need to use for grant funding or we might want to talk to the chamber about.
Quick example, the facilities element, right, has an outline of all of our public facilities. We need that information for our insurance filings. We need it whenever people are talking about tours, whenever you're talking about the total cost and value of the city. And so having that information where it's just like, oh, here's the link to everything you need and all the documentation, the addresses, boom.
So every time you update it, the links all stay the same. It's just, you're just updating just
the piece of information. That's the theory.
And we want to change, we're calling it a different voice, where the voice in the existing comp plan is an old crotchety planner who likes to write. We're wanting to have it be more of a, we're actually excited about our city, where there's nothing that says that a comp plan has to be absolutely objective. So while there are inventory lists and process recitals and spreadsheets that we're going to have to put in, it can actually be something that's more exciting to read. And by being more exciting, probably we're going to have more people that disagree with it. Right now, it's so dense that no one will read it to disagree with it, but maybe people will say, that's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I can totally understand what you're saying, and you have no idea what you're talking about, which is good, because then we can actually have some more of that conversation going. Because we tried desperately hard to get people to participate, and they really don't. And we found that when we go out and we present like this, and I think we're kind of easy to approach, they say, well, gosh, you know, the way that you guys presented it is different from what we've seen other jurisdictions present. I'm actually interested in that. So why just have it be the presentation when it can actually be the actual document as well? Also, and this is something that there's a good and a bad for this, measurable goals, where right now the comprehensive plan says we want a vibrant downtown. What does that mean? How do we know whether it's vibrant or not? How do we know whether or not when we have programs that reduce the cost of development downtown, are those successful? Because are they achieving a purpose or not? Or are we trying to tackle a problem that doesn't exist? Have we said, the reason why downtown is not developing is because the costs are too high, so we reduce the cost and development still doesn't happen. Maybe we haven't approached it the same way. And downtown is just one example. So what are our goals and how can we measure them? Now, the flip side to this is, as the mayor might say, sometimes when you have a very specific goal, you ignore the other opportunities that might result from it. So, you know, my goal is to create a vibrant downtown as measured by the number of people that live there. And so I am going to, or the city is going to, reject an application that comes in that would put in Microsoft downtown. That's not people living downtown, therefore it doesn't meet our goal, therefore I have to deny you. Even though having a Microsoft or you know, similar thing downtown would be huge. So careful what you wish for, where we do need to have some measurable goals, but we don't want the goals that we have to be so overly prescriptive that it avoids us, and this goes for the whole comp plan, we don't want the comp plan to prevent us on a day-to-day basis from making good decisions. We want, the reason why you hire staff is so that we can say, today the best decision in light of the comp plan is this, instead of, well, what does the comp plan say? Oh, I have to say no to this. Good idea.
Do you feel like that we've done that? I don't feel like we've done that. Because the comp plan always just felt like guidelines.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it should. The concern is, do we come up with some really cool, innovative program that's really a miserable failure? We come up with the gateway zoning, and we say, oh, that was a great idea because it met these goals to diversify and all that. But it was terrible because no one took advantage of it. That's an easy measurable. It's much more difficult with the growth of an area. And so that's something that I think that we all need to think about is, do we want measurable goals? Are we trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist? Or what would those goals be? And it's going to vary from element to element. So kind of getting into the heart of it, and we're more than halfway done, so we're in good shape. First, the land use element, that identifies overall growth. It's going to be the first one that you see. I go back just really quick just to show you. the order that we're planning on taking is we're going to bring the land use element to you first, where what we want you to do is to either hold a public hearing or have some formal process where you can tell us and the Planning Commission these five things need to change or these 10 things need to change. It's then going to go back to the Planning Commission for a final public hearing around May, and then all of the chapters are going to come back to you in June. So this way the Planning Commission has already looked at stuff, got them to where they feel is about 80 to 90%. Then you get to see them. You make whatever changes you want. We bring that back to the Planning Commission where they see that for the last time, and then they send it on to you. So you're not being just introduced to all of these elements at once and being asked for the public hearing and approval.
So will it goes to the Planning Commission, to us, back to the Planning Commission, back to us?
Correct.
Okay. I thought we always just did the Planning Commission, did their thing, and then we got it, and then we moved on from there.
And what we're hoping for is not to put you or the Planning Commission in a position where you see something and you rightly want to deviate from what the Planning Commission saw. So this way, you can still do that, but you've given some kind of advance notice saying, we'd really like more focus on this or that. And then we can take it to the Planning Commission and have the time to do that, where we're hoping that we're going to have at least a month for each element to make those necessary changes. It just buys us a little bit more time or confidence where you guys aren't just a one and done. So,
okay.
More input.
We get more input that way. So the land use element is the first one, where it is the primary driver of the comprehensive plan. And I don't say that because land use tends to be planning. That's what the Growth Management Act says, is it really all starts with those population employment allocations, and then you look at land use, and then that informs all the other elements, which then go back and they inform the land use element. So land use element is most evidenced by the comprehensive plan map that you have before you. What we're wanting to do is talk a little bit more about what the different growth and types of development would be within each of our different land use classifications. Because oftentimes you hear mixed use, or you hear commercial or industrial or residential, and you come to mind one concept. Like in residential, maybe you think single family, whereas in Seattle you might think multifamily. Each one of the different land use classifications has a lot of different use types that are allowed in the different zones. And we're wanting to show through here and through these different color changes that you can't see all that well, that while in residential you might have the single family, in another part of residential you're going to have fairly dense apartment buildings. In the mixed use areas you might see anything from strictly residential density to you have restaurants and commercial buildings on the bottom floor and residential up top. This is something I feel was really missing, where we don't have the visual depiction of what these things are. We just talk in general terms about commercial is this. And it's extremely boring, and it doesn't give applicants the feeling that they can propose something out of the box, which is something that we're missing here, where a lot of our applicants were born and raised here or live here, and they depend on a certain amount of development per year so that they can keep their families eating. So they are risk averse. They don't want to step out of their comfort zone and try something that hasn't been done in Ferndale. So that's why we see a lot of those fourplexes, because that's safe. We want to give them the permission to think outside of the box a little bit. Who knows if their lending institution is going to let them, but at least it's not the city that's necessarily holding them back within certain constraints.
Our UGA numbers aren't changing, though, right? We're not going to ask for more UGA or...
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because we don't think that we need it. We think that our neighborhoods are going to benefit by either having, you know, them continue to be built out as they are, or is the closer to the core you get by densifying, where, again, densification in downtown... Commercial follows rooftops. I mean, that's commercial will not be so risky that they're going to go and be the first ones out there.
Isn't that kind of what you like? An example is what's happening there at 4th and Vista. whether it's actually on the single family houses and putting in.
Exactly. Exactly. And there, when we get to the transportation element and other things, making sure that all of our infrastructure is prepared for that so that infill doesn't just happen for the sake of infill, but it actually does make sense. And that gentleman actually took advantage of our downtown incentive programs where he saved a bunch of money. I forget what it is, tens of thousands of dollars on his development.
We still have that chunk of UGA Reserve, though, just north. We see a little bit of UGA Reserve and then UGA. Is that... So we're not asking to change that. We're not asking them to bring that UGA reserve into UGA?
Correct.
Okay.
And again, we're going to have the opportunity in 6 or 7 years to revisit this.
So you're not assuming we need that for housing in the next 5, 6 years?
No. We are showing that we could ask for a slight expansion in our residential UGA. We're not going to need it in the next 5 or 6 years. For sure, we're not. We're not going to be going up into that area by then. We want to see what happens as far as that some moderate infill. You know, what does happen, especially with Bellingham's prices being so high, it's an excellent opportunity for us to see what can happen. And then also there's a political reason where Ferndale still has some remnants of not wanting to be responsible as far as its future growth. And by us coming forward and saying we could have asked for an expansion, but we're not, I hope, will be a positive statement for the county council.
Okay.
Where them seeing that Ferndale is different from the Ferndale that they might expect, that might give us a little bit of a feather in our cap.
As long as we don't need it. I don't mind playing good little soldier if we don't need it.
We won't need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Ideally, not ideally, but once we do need it, if we're 5 or 7 years on, we're not talking about, oh, we need 30 more acres. We could say we're going to need 150 acres, so we're going to need that entire UGA reserve. So that way it can be a very clear statement of need instead of a maybe.
It's working the refs.
I'm sorry?
It's working the refs.
It's working the refs, yeah. The land use element, also expanding on the neighborhood or district emphasis, and you saw that in that earlier map a little bit where Ferndale still is considered by many to be a bedroom community, including a lot of folks that live here, where they don't know their neighbors all that well. They don't necessarily identify themselves as a neighborhood, maybe as a homeowners association, but not something more than that. So what we're doing is, for each of the districts, we are creating a lot of content, not only links to homeowners associations, but what's the history of this district? Did you know that 400 homes in this neighborhood were created when the refineries came in? Did you know that it's part of one watershed where it all drains together? Did you know that there's this wetland complex? Gosh, you know, you might not have realized, but your kids all go to the same school.
Did you break the districts, those districts in the earlier maps, did you break those down by population, like as though they would be voting districts?
We talked about that. So
I could just see them... Someone wanting to turn those into voting districts. We've had that before, and I'm just curious if you, how much effort was put into actually making them have the same number of people.
We intentionally created 8, hoping to avoid that.
Okay.
Simply because our code is pretty clear. There's 7 of you guys, and so we figured if there was 8, we would dodge some of that. But they are more meant to divide among similar geographic lines rather than population balance.
I guess I'm just hesitating to get people to start thinking like they're all part of one district when we're all part of Ferndale.
Right.
I would hesitate to pay people, well, I'm District 4 and that doesn't really affect me, so that's not my issue.
And I think that council should have that discussion because there are pros and cons where certainly the needs in Port Away are different from the needs on Church,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some respects. But what does define these districts as districts? And we didn't necessarily want to come to that final conclusion because there are so many different things. We ended up, as Riley said, you know, contiguous areas generally on land use. Is it based on environmental? Is it based on school districts? Is it based on voting boundaries? Who knows? But it would be sure nice if neighbors could talk with neighbors more, and maybe in 5 years we say, gosh, that District 8 should really be split into these areas or should be redefined as this. But this way we can start. It would be fantastic if we did have more people saying, I not only represent a homeowners association, but I represent four or five homeowners associations where we've all come together and we think that this project is important. You know, it might be more stressful having more people out there, but having them speak with a common voice and having talked with their neighbors would be cool.
That goes back to what council member Malpezzi wanted when he was on the council of setting up neighborhoods by going in hands. Yeah, and in front of you, but then was talked about, well, how do you do that? Yeah,
and a lot of I've been looking at a lot of cities in that grew through our phase, and of course every city grows different. Ferndale's a unique community, but a lot of them end up with neighborhood associations as a way to connect people with each other. And so I think laying those seeds now is more of a uniter than a divider.
That's one of my concerns, is dividing us up into smaller and smaller pieces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What drove that? Why did we need it? I haven't heard the plus side of it yet. We've all heard the negative, but what do we need that for?
Well, we're required to do neighborhood planning. That's
no, I mean form districts.
The districts or neighborhoods are a required element of the comprehensive plan, where we do need to have some sort of what are the districts in your community or what are potential ones. And
is that something new this year?
No, it's always been.
Then why are we doing it this year? We haven't done it before.
I don't remember having a district before.
We have. We've had it for about 10 years now.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess I just missed that.
Shows it. Nobody reads it.
Right.
I missed that.
What is that picture, the upper left-hand picture? What is that?
Aerial of Flood in Ferndale. I think that's the golf course. Well, no, actually, it's not. Maybe it is. Here's
the next
side.
It looks like the next side there.
Here's
I-5.
The district concept, it doesn't, it provides information instead of policy, you know, at this point.
Obviously, we didn't use it very much. I mean, because if it's been here for 10 years, I mean, never talked
about it. Apparently,
it's
a non-issue, so I thought it was something new.
And I'm excited from the website point, because I get to weave in some more local history about each of the different areas, and it's an opportunity for people to learn a little bit more about their community. And so for people who are living in the Portalway neighborhood, we can, or district area, whatever we want to use to describe that place, we can talk a little bit more about what it was before and what it's going to be and have a little more information for people.
This discussion is really helpful because what it's telling me is perhaps having information in there is one thing, but not having it result in direct policy or, you know, any sort of political. Mm-hmm. And so that helps to kind of guide what we put or don't put in there.
So it's for land use and communications, not necessarily to break us into political districts or wards? Or
absolutely. Realtors don't do a very good job of talking about what you're likely to see or about these areas. They say, you know, this house was built in 1975, buy or figure out which school your kids are going to go to. You know, and so we can provide more information than that here.
Well, I was just going to ask, is there a reason why you're using the term district rather than neighborhood? I mean, I know it's just semantics, but you know, district implies, you know,
politics.
Politics, yeah. Whereas neighborhood implies, you know, meeting my neighbors and getting to know the people that I drive past my house.
Or even region 1, yeah. region 2.
No, not necessarily, because if you think of Bellingham and you have the Fairhaven District and
right.
you have the Fountain District, and I don't think of those as political.
Well, I don't either, but yeah, but you also have neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Bellingham.
Those are names, not numbers.
Just don't call them wards.
So, yeah, district versus neighborhood, in some ways the term district was arrived at because a lot of folks are very scared of the whole neighborhood thing in Bellingham, where the neighborhoods have created a kind of NIMBYist attitude. So trying to say, we're not proposing these political boundaries that Bellingham has is one of the reasons why we went to districts. In the actual comp plan, we do, instead of numbers, have names for them. And that was something that we saw as, it's not numbers, it's, you know, sense of place. I think that we're heading in the direction that, that you're talking about, and you'll see next month exactly how we do lay it out. And we do expand it beyond where we were last time. If council's opposed to it, we can certainly go back. I mean, again, we can reduce it down to the checkoff, which is what we've done in the past with those neighborhoods. So, the other thing, which was what I thought would be a little bit more controversial, the environmental component, where we are required to look at the environment, and we don't want to make this political, where certainly talking about the environment or environmental changes, I know I don't have much time left. Which of the five clocks that are in front of me should I be looking at?
This one.
That one. Okay. We could talk a lot about, is global warming happening? Is climate change happening? How much is it going to happen? All that. We would rather not focus on that because it becomes so political, but instead recognize that the environment is dynamic, that whether it's changing for 1,000 years or whether or not El Nino is happening, there are issues that we need to address and to be able to, again, be aware of the opportunities or challenges that, that might present themselves through it. I think that we can get at all the various issues that council members might want to get to through that discussion without saying, oh, the city of Ferndale is denying climate change or the city of Ferndale is embracing this left-wing conspiracy, Agenda 21. Transportation elephant in the room, moving on. Relatively recent, we're not anticipating huge changes to that. We're going according to plan. We're growing the same amount that we thought we were in 2011. Things are starting to happen. We are wanting to talk about an expanded non-motorized discussion. We do need to talk about rail impacts. Not that we necessarily have that much information. Again, using visuals as much as possible. So again, updates rather than comprehensive changes to it. The housing element. Again, talking less about the number of housing units that we will, but talking about the types of housing, where we can start to address some things like what are the differences between a four-story apartment building and a fourplex? What kind of densities do we see? What kind of sense of place do they do folks that live in these areas get? Does it result in an increase in crime? If so, what do we do?
Is that where affordable housing comes in?
That's where affordable housing comes in, too, and affordable housing at what cost? Are we going to have to subsidize recreation? Can we mandate that they have recreation opportunities? Things like that. Utilities element is generally third-party utilities, Comcast, natural gas, things that we don't have a lot of control in, but we do want to add in a discussion of municipal fiber as a long-range what-if-we-did-this, where we could then reduce costs to our customers or to ourselves as well. Capital facilities element, this is where we have water, sewer, parks, stormwater. Right now it's extremely dense language. It's written by engineers, and if there's anything worse than a planner writing something, it's an engineer writing something. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking at doing is less, making it less dense, but also having an interactive map where we can combine multiple capital facilities on it, where we can see, oh gosh, we've got a sewer project here and a trail project here or a parks or water project here at different timelines. What if we can combine those into one project where this was going to be 5 years out? What if we make it 1 year out? And oh gosh, we already have the parks funding through impact fees. We can possibly use that as leverage for some other things. It'll be interesting whether we can do that. Some cities have done that. Spokane, for one, has been really successful at it.
So is this where we'll explain why we're doing what we're going to do at I-5 in Maine with those stormwater, so that people can look at it and see the projects and understand this is why this one is happening? I'd like people to try and see that as a big system. It's not like we're just digging up the road here for no reason.
The big system concept is a huge part of it, and that's also where the multimedia can go in as well. Where we can focus on those projects or a collaboration of projects. I have two more slides. I'll be really quick. Capital facilities element also, council wants to talk about what we're going to do with our buildings, and we're wanting to include a discussion in there so we don't surprise ourselves with what we might need. And Bo's already working on it. We're already a good way through that, but what are we going to need and what are our expectations over 20 years so we can start planning for it? Are we going to be here in 20 years? If we all pretty much agree that we won't
You'll
be here
probably
in 20 years, I might be here. If we're not going to be in this building in 20 years, our comp plan should say, you know, no one thinks we're going to be in this building.
Why bet we still are 20 years from now?
Well, you won't be around, so you
won't. I don't care.
Economic
development
element.
There's too many people living here.
This is a new element where we do need to talk about our general goals, strategies. Some council members are more interested in this than others, and I, for all of these, I would welcome interaction directly with you folks if you want to. Talking about where are we economically? You know, are we good? How are we in relationship to other jurisdictions where sales tax base? Here we are. We're down on the low side compared to a place like Burlington, which is on the extreme high side.
Is there a way to, I know there's a guy at Western who keeps track of what the multiplier is of jobs. So if we brought a factory in that had 100 family wage jobs, they wouldn't be bringing in sales tax, but you'd have people making good wages. Is there a way for, like, you know, little old Burndale to be able to figure that into our comprehensive plan? So we're not just looking at retail, we're also looking at jobs.
Probably. And that's, as we go through this, I'd really like to understand what are the important indicators of a good economy in Ferndale, where it isn't just retail sales tax. So last one, we're going to be bringing stuff to you through June. We'd like to know how deep you want to get on these elements. Do you just want something that Planning Commission said it's good, maybe you don't quite get it, it's not in your wheelhouse, and it's done, or do you want to have several workshops on these things?
You know, we can't resist changing. You need to do a lot more work, though, so we can be able to.
And then the impact fee discussion will generally follow the comprehensive plan, but we know that you want to understand when you're considering the comprehensive plan what effect that might have on impact fees.
So are you going to have us revisit impact fees, including all the stuff we've done downtown? And are we talking about, like, across the board, look at everything, or just a few little things you think need to be tweaked?
We do need to relook at it because the impact fees are based on the projects that are identified in the comprehensive plan.
Okay, so they have to match.
Does that mean that they have to increase or decrease or change? Not necessarily, but you do need to have had discussions saying, because we have done this or are going to do this, this is what it means for our impact fees. So what we as staff understand is we don't want to put you in a position of saying, well, now that we have updated the comp plan, we now have to do this. And if only you had told us that the fees were going to increase when we were considering the comp plan, we would never have made that decision. So we're going to try to get you that information to the greatest extent we can before you consider the comp plan.
Just a little side note. At the fire district meeting this week, Chief Russell presented their plan to the commissioners for their preliminary review. And then he said part of their plan was based off of some of the assumptions made in our comp plan. And that they'll be forwarding their final element to us to be included in when they're done. So I'm not sure how much interaction your guys, you and Chief Russell, would have, but that was what was presented to the commissioners at their meeting.
Well, we now have a 5-minute break because somebody talked too much.